The future is about defending fundamental rights.
World leaders meet about Afghanistan. It's Wednesday, October 13th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Chris Cascio in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, global population vaccination goal. New Zealand lockdown extended. Parasports badminton athlete spotlighted. Helping paralyzed read and write. Skateboarding gender shift. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Leaders of the grouping of the world's 20 largest economies held a virtual extraordinary meeting Tuesday on Afghanistan, less than 2 months after the Taliban took over the country. Italian Prime Minister Mario Draghi, who holds the rotating presidency of the G20, had pressed for the meeting, saying Afghanistan is headed for a humanitarian catastrophe. Sabina Castelfranco reports from Rome.
Italian Prime Minister Mario Draghi said Tuesday's closed-door virtual summit on Afghanistan would focus on security, humanitarian aid, and human rights in the country. It is being held less than 3 weeks before the G20 summit of world leaders to be held in Rome on October 30th and 31st. Since the Taliban returned to power on August 15th, following the U.S. troop withdrawal after two decades of war, there have been growing concerns about the humanitarian situation in the country. Leaders will hold discussions on how to combat terrorism, how to guarantee freedom of movement, both inside and outside Afghanistan's borders, for Afghans as well as members of non-governmental organizations, and the condition of women in the country, which Draghi has defined a priority. The Prime Minister spoke about Afghanistan in a recent interview on Italian state television. Draghi said that for Italy, the future is about defending fundamental rights, defending the rights of women, and protecting all those who have, over the years, exposed themselves to dangerous situations in order to defend these rights in Afghanistan. A major challenge will be pressing the Taliban on guaranteeing the rights of women who face discrimination and violence, including their full return to schools and to workplaces and their recognition in political life. Only boys are allowed to attend high school, and at present, more than 2 million girls are denied access to education, and Afghanistan has one of the lowest female literacy rates in the world, according to the World Bank. The summit has been extended to the Netherlands, Spain, Singapore, and Qatar, which has played an important role in the Taliban's dialogue with the West. Afghanistan's neighbors, Pakistan and Iran, were not invited to attend the summit, and Chinese media reported President Xi Jinping would not take part. But to maximize involvement, various organizations are also joining, including the United Nations, the European Union, the World Bank, and the International Monetary Fund. Afghanistan's spiraling economy and the need to provide humanitarian support also to nearby nations taking in refugees are central to the meeting. Italy's Foreign Minister Luigi Di Maio has said he has asked for an increase in funds for cooperation in Afghanistan to help civilians. He added that everything must be done to avoid the state from collapsing, because he said if Afghanistan collapses, we will face uncontrolled migration to nearby nations with subsequent destabilization in the area. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
Be sure to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. India prepares for long haul on China border dispute. UNICEF says 19,000 migrant children have crossed dangerous jungle. 5 Indian soldiers killed in gunfight with rebels in Kashmir. UN chief urges world to prevent Afghan economic collapse. US and UK warn citizens to avoid Afghanistan hotels. Get complete coverage on all these stories and more on VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. Thank you for joining us on VOA Asia on this Wednesday. A group of World Health Organization experts is calling for 70% of the global population to be fully vaccinated by mid-2022 to prevent the COVID-19 pandemic from progressing in more dangerous ways. The 15-member Strategic Advisory Group of Experts, known as SAGE, which makes recommendations to WHO on vaccine policy and strategy, just concluded a four-day meeting. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The experts say more than enough vaccines are available to cover everyone by the middle of next year if the doses are not hoarded by wealthy countries and are shared equitably with poorer nations which, as of yet, do not have them. WHO Director of Immunization Vaccines and Biologicals, Catherine O'Brien, says it is urgent to get the doses to places that are falling behind in the race to vaccinate.
And unless we do that, we will continue to have transmission, and transmission will lead to more variants. And the issue of the variants is that there is the potential for those variants to escape immune pressure and to basically undo much of the progress that has been made.
The experts recommend people who are moderately and severely immune compromised should be offered an additional or third dose of all COVID-19 vaccines. O'Brien says the third dose should be administered 1 to 3 months after people have received their second shot.
The intent of the third dose is to induce that person's immune system to have protection that would be at the level that was demonstrated to prevent against severe disease, hospitalization, and death in the clinical trials, which excluded people with immunocompromising conditions.
The SAGE experts say these additional shots are different from booster shots, which are not needed at this stage of the pandemic. For now, they say it is more important that people who have not been inoculated receive their jabs before people who are already vaccinated get a third dose. They say they will discuss booster shots at their next meeting, November 11th, and issue further recommendations then. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
With many Americans who got Pfizer vaccinations already rolling up their sleeves for a booster shot, millions of others who receive the Moderna or Johnson & Johnson vaccine wait anxiously to learn when it's their turn. U.S. federal regulators begin tackling that question this week. On Thursday and Friday, the Food and Drug Administration convenes its independent advisors for the first stage in the process of deciding whether extra shots of the two vaccines should be dispensed, and if so, who should get them and when. The final go-ahead is not expected for at least another week. Still to come on VOA Asia, why lockdown restrictions in New Zealand's largest city will continue. Happening now in Asia, at least 9 people are dead and 11 more are missing in the Philippines after Tropical Storm Kompasu passed over the north, triggering floods and landslides overnight. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Welcome back to VOA Asia. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un reviewed powerful missiles developed to launch nuclear strikes on the U.S. mainland as he vowed to build an invincible military to cope with what he called persistent U.S. hostility, state media reported Tuesday. In an apparent continued effort to drive a wedge between the United States and South Korea, Kim also used his speech at a rare exhibition of weapon systems Monday to stress that his military might isn't targeted at South Korea and that there shouldn't be another war pitting Korean people against each other. The U.S. has frequently signaled it's not hostile to our state, but there is no action-based evidence to make us believe that they are not hostile, Kim said Monday, according to the official Korean Central News Agency. The exhibition, which KCNA says was to mark the 76th birthday of the ruling Workers' Party on Sunday, was the first of its kind since Kim took power in late 2011, according to Seoul officials. Seoul's defense ministry said South Korean and U.S. intelligence authorities were analyzing the North Korean weapons displayed but didn't elaborate. The United States has repeatedly offered talks with North Korea anywhere and at any time without preconditions. Kim has called such an offer a cunning attempt to conceal U.S. hostility against North Korea, as he wants Washington to ease the sanctions or suspend its regular military drills with Seoul first before the talks can resume. New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern says the South Pacific Island nation is at one of the most challenging moments in the COVID-19 pandemic, as lockdown restrictions in Auckland are extended by at least a week. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
43 new community cases of COVID-19 were reported Tuesday in New Zealand. The number of infections might be small compared to other countries, but in the New Zealand context, it is significant. Since the pandemic began, the South Pacific nation has recorded about 4,700 confirmed and probable cases. 28 people have died. Authorities said Monday that Auckland, the country's biggest city with 1.7 million residents, would remain at alert level 3 for at least one more week. The same measures, which restrict travel and make masks mandatory on public transport, apply to neighbouring regions Waikato and Northland. Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern says the lockdowns are essential.
We know this has been an incredibly hard period for those in Auckland, but these measures, when followed, make all the difference. We want the R value, that's the reproduction of cases, to stay as close to one as possible. It has crept up a little in recent days. This means the number of cases will grow. If it moves up further, cases will grow faster. But if followed, our alert level restrictions can help control that spread.
Teachers and health and disability sector workers must be vaccinated against COVID-19 under a government mandate. New Zealand was among a small number of countries to drive coronavirus cases down to near zero last year because of border closures and snap lockdowns. However, an outbreak of the highly contagious Delta variant in August has frustrated efforts to stamp out transmission. Ardern has abandoned the long-held strategy of eliminating coronavirus. Instead, the country of 5 million plans to live with the virus and manage its spread as vaccination rates increase. But Ananish Chowdhury, a professor of behavioural and experimental economics at the University of Auckland, believes lockdowns are the wrong approach to containing the virus. He'd prefer more targeted protections for vulnerable groups, including the elderly, and he detects a growing frustration among the public.
The sense of solidarity is gone. Part of it is some missteps on the part of the government, for instance, not getting the vaccination rollout going much earlier. The economic costs are piling up. In Auckland, at least, the businesses are suffering. New Zealand businesses are mostly kind of small and medium-scale enterprises. So their ability to withstand this massive economic shock is very limited.
Ardern said strict lockdowns would end once 90% of New Zealand's eligible population was vaccinated. Health authorities said Tuesday the current figure was 58%. New Zealand's international borders remain closed to most foreign nationals. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Most of New Zealand's healthcare workers and teachers will soon be legally required to get vaccinated against the coronavirus, the government announced Monday. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Continuing now with VOA Asia, parasports, sports events involving athletes with disabilities, often don't get as much attention as comparable events for non-disabled athletes. And this is also the case with badminton. But as VOA's Randy Wikakshana reports, some athletes with disabilities in Indonesia are hoping to change that.
Life had taken an unexpected turn for both Wiwin Andri and Muhammad Subhan in Indonesia.
In 2011, I got into a motorbike accident. I felt like I lost my way. The world felt bleak. I did not understand anything anymore. My leg was amputated.
I had an accident back in 2005. Then I started to use wheelchair. I went blank afterward. I had no idea that there were sports for us in wheelchairs. Then I discovered wheelchair badminton when I was 26 years old.
Badminton gave Andri and Subhan not only new hope and an opportunity to stay active, but also a shot to make their country proud as competitive para-badminton players.
It was very difficult at first, because we were not born with a wheelchair. We needed to adapt, like understanding how a wheelchair works, how to use it, how to sit properly, how to navigate.
Subhan used to play badminton as a hobby since childhood and needed to adapt.
Imagine, now we have two tools we need to focus on and control. Not only do we need to command the racket, now we also need to master the wheelchair.
Badminton is a very popular sport in Indonesia after soccer. The country's world-class badminton athletes often win gold medals in the Summer Olympics. Para-badminton, however, is another story. One coach, Pitriani, who like many Indonesians only goes by one name, says the problem starts with finding potential players.
Recruitment is challenging. We sometimes need to go to schools for people with disabilities. Some of the students are from poor families. Oftentimes, the main problem is their lack of knowledge.
It is a sentiment Andri understands.
I never imagined myself doing sports. I did not even know that sports for the disabled exists. We hardly see news about the Paralympics on Indonesian TV.
The hope is that one day, Indonesia's para-badminton athletes will earn as many medals and receive as much public exposure as their non-disabled fellow players. In Jakarta, Indonesia, Randy Wijaksana, VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia, an Indian arms maker with high-profile U.S. and European shareholders has been supplying Myanmar. Even after the country's military toppled a democratically elected government on February 1st and killed hundreds of civilians in a bid to crush any resistance, a local rights group has said. Stay up to date with VOA or listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, brain-computer interfaces, where computers analyze brain signals and help paralyzed people to write and carry out other actions, is a burgeoning area of research. VOA's Dina Mitchell has the story of one breakthrough.
At first glance, this writing may seem unremarkable, but it was written entirely through thought. As the participant imagined writing a letter or symbol, sensors implanted in his brain picked up on patterns of electrical activity, which an algorithm then interpreted to trace the path of an imaginary pen. Dr. Jamie Henderson of Stanford University spoke to VOA over Zoom.
We've learned that the control signals for limb movement are present even years after paralysis, which is really sort of fascinating and almost unexpected.
Henderson and other scientists with BrainGate, a research collaborative, have successfully decoded brain activity associated with handwriting motor imagery. Their goal is to help people who are locked in, meaning unable to move their bodies, communicate faster. One of their main subjects, a firefighter who was paralyzed falling while taking out the trash, works closely with Henderson.
So he, you know, subsequently has been living with paralysis now for over a decade. He's really just a valued and indispensable member of our team.
Creating a successful brain-computer interface, or BCI, is a quest for several research groups and technology firms. While widespread use may be far off, these breakthroughs point to ways technology might be able to extend human capabilities. This video from GTEC Engineering demonstrates the technology. After 5 days of practice, the participant could type at 90 characters per minute, which BrainGate says set a new record for BCIs of any kind. Here is Henderson again.
So with each of these new breakthroughs, we begin to learn more about how the brain processes movement signals and potentially even higher order things like decision-making, for example, or error detection.
While brain implants are invasive, the hope is that more research will result in better technology for the people who really need it. Dina Mitchell for VOA News.
Finally on VOA Asia, skateboarding has moved from the streets to prestigious competitions, including the Summer Olympics. It has also shifted from being a male-dominated sport to one that girls are enjoying too, as VOA's Vina Mubtadi reports.
After more than a year of staying home because of the pandemic, 11-year-old Angela Justice wanted to try something new. She chose to learn to ride a skateboard, a choice that took her mother by surprise.
And I was shocked when she said that. I was like, what? Okay. And then we started seeing like other little girls, like this little girl in the park skating. And I was like, oh, look, she's doing it.
I like being in person. I also like doing new tricks.
She is one of a dozen students who learned skateboarding from Goats on Wheels, a group in Montgomery County, Maryland.
I seem to have more inquiries from girls. I guess it's, girls are just breaking through the barriers these days, especially on the Olympics. You see the smallest girls getting the biggest prizes and, you know, winning the golds and stuff like that.
The shift is being welcomed by professional skateboarders, including Indonesian national athlete Nyimas Bunga Cinta.
I'm really happy to go skateboarding with other girls. Sometimes when we practice, we like to keep up with each other's skills.
The 15-year-old recalls the situation was very different when she first took on the sport in 2014.
It was still dominated by boys because all the girls were older, 18 years old or more. I was the only younger girl.
As a hijab-wearing girl who rides skateboards in a conservative country, Cinta has destroyed many stereotypes, something that her father supports.
That's what skaters do. The hashtag is skate and destroy. Everything that a skateboard runs over will be destroyed, including mindsets. Stereotypes like women should stay in the kitchen, must listen to men, and should not be dominant are broken by skateboarders.
Today, Cinta has gained a series of national and international medals. She was the youngest medalist at the Indonesia-hosted Asian Games in 2018, and she competed in the U.S. qualifying event for the Tokyo Olympics.
I haven't reached the goal I want. I want to be an Olympian.
Three, okay.
She also wants to see more girls skateboarding on the streets. Vina Mubtadi, VOA News, Silver Spring, Maryland.
Thank you for listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can also find us on Instagram, YouTube, and at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, Amy Hybels, and Jessica Stone. I'm Chris Gascale in Washington. Enjoy your day, stay safe, and be well.